pleased to have Miguel Campiglia visiting us. He did his PhD at Penn State with Abel Aschner, then did a postdoc in India, and is now back to his home country, Uruguay. And we will talk about generalized beam asymmetry and subbeaming software.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you very much to the Quantum Gravity Group for having me here, and especially to Philippe for the invitation. I will be presenting work I did in collaboration with Alok Lada based on these two references. So let me start with some motivation. Over the past 2 years, there's been a renewed interest in BML Group that started with work by Strominger collaborators and followed by many people. The new insight that started these activities was the realization that BMS can be seen as a symmetry of DS metrics that is spontaneously broken, and the resulting constraints such symmetry imposed on DS metrics were actually known in a different disguise, and is the content of Weinberg's Sofort-Abitone theorem in addition to Poincaré invariance. These ideas extend to groups that are larger than BMS, which means further constraints on DS metrics, and today I will be focusing on this constraint encoded in this result of Cajazzo and Strominger and about the subleading soft gravitons. And we will argue that such a soft theorem can be understood as arising from a diff S2 symmetry that is also spontaneously broken. A disclaimer is that I will restrict attention to three-level S metrics. So the talk will be divided in two parts. In the first part, it will be review of background material in which we base our work. So I will review the classic definition of BMS group and BMS charges, the recent relation with S metrics and soft gravitons, and in particular, this Cajazzo-Strominger soft theorem and its relation with this extended BMS. Then I will move to our stuff, which is a different extension of BMS. I will describe this, what we call generalized BMS group. It contains this diff S2 part whose charges can be computed, and with those charges, we can have this equivalence. And I will have some final comments. Please stop me anytime if you have questions. So let us then start with BMS definition of BMS group, and for that I need to start describing asymptotically flat space times at null infinity. So here I made some drawing in the blackboard. So this will be like a conformal drawing of flat space time or an asymptotically flat space time at null infinity. We have future null infinity, I plus, past null infinity. And this, there is a set of coordinates that are very convenient to describe such space times, and are these bonded coordinates. So we have u and xa. Xa are coordinates on the two sphere. U, xa are give me coordinates on future null infinity. And r is the radial coordinate that tells me how far I am from infinity. And the idea is that one can set up a 1/r expansion of the space-time metric away from null infinity. And here I'm displaying the leading terms of such expansion that will be relevant for our discussion. So if I restrict attention just to this first part, that's just space-time, Minkowski space-time written in these retarded coordinates. So in that case, u is t minus r, this retarded time. And q naught ab is just the unit metric on the sphere. Then the next term in this expansion is given by this two-dimensional tensor CAB that will play a crucial role. And then there are further subleading terms. And what is nice of these coordinates is that when you look at Einstein equations on this ansatz, then there is a clean splitting between what is free data and what is constrained by Einstein equations. So what you find is that this two-dimensional tensor C is unconstrained by Einstein equations, so it represents free data. And all the remaining subleading terms in this 1/r expansion can be determined through this tensor C by solving Einstein equations. I'm simplifying a little bit here, but for our discussion, that's what we need. And finally, this free data, this tensor C, is a two-dimensional tensor that is symmetric and is trace-free with respect to this sphere metric. So it has two independent components, and that corresponds to the two polarizations of gravitational waves. So this tensor C encodes information of gravitational radiation at null infinity. So we will talk more about this C, and we will use it. But now I wanted to go to the definition of BMS group, and that will be the definition is just the asymptotic isometries of these asymptotically flat spacetimes. So in order to find what are those asymptotic isometries, we look at vector fields that are asymptotically Killing, so that satisfy Killing equation only asymptotically as we go to null infinity. And what you find is that there are two families of solutions to such condition. The first family is take this leading form. It is a function on the sphere. X hat will denote always points on the sphere here. A function, an arbitrary function on the sphere times this direction partial u. So the direction along the null rays at null infinity. And this is the kind of strange or new, the strange thing of BMS group, that just imposing asymptotic Killing condition doesn't fix this function f. So you have infinitely many, and these are the super translations. If we were looking at exact Killing symmetries in flat Minkowski spacetime, then we will only have four of such super translations associated to the usual spacetime translations, and the constant function associated to time translations, and three functions associated to space translations. The second family of solutions is less is more familiar, is what you will expect from Minkowski space. It is parameterized by two-dimensional vectors on the sphere in this manner, which are conformally Killing on the two sphere. There are six conformally Killing vector fields on the two sphere that correspond to three rotations and three boosts. And this is how the Lorentz group appears at null infinity. So basically, we have this isomorphism between the group of conformal isometries on the two sphere that is generated by these CKB vector fields and with the Lorentz group. And these are the vector fields that we will later generalize. So the total group then takes the form of a product of these super translations with the group of conformal isometries on the two sphere, and that's the BMS group. Just for reference, the Poincaré group, it has the same structure as the Poincaré group, except that in the what was it, this abelian group of translations in the Poincaré group got enlarged to this infinite dimensional abelian subgroup of super translations. Okay, so now let us talk a bit about BMS charges, and for that we need to talk about phase space. So this free data tensor CAB, there is a natural symplectic form there, which makes it which makes this space of free data phase space, known as radiative phase space. And the important part for us is that this the action of BMS in such phase space is symplectic, so you can find the generators, the charges. And I just giving the I'm not giving details, but we will see some later. But I just want to take from here some qualitative aspect of these charges for the case of super translations. So
question.
Yes.
The CABs are their own momenta. There's no C's and then some pi's conjugate to C's.
Right. It's only the C, right. Maybe I should write.
Isn't
yeah.
that half the number of
degrees of freedom? It is the same as like a massless scalar field at null infinity has similar structure.
Oh, because they're all going out in one direction.
Right. So the symplectic structure is like you have CAB contracted with C dot, the derivative with respect to U, some deltas. So it's the same for a massless scalar field at null infinity, it has the same structure. It's like phi times phi dot. So that, yeah, that's because you are at in a null surface.
So roughly speaking, there's half the number of degrees of freedom because you're all going outward.
Right. Yeah. The counting. Yeah.
Why is it half?
It's, yeah, the counting somehow, yeah, because it's not space-like, but null, the surface, your initial data surface, then it has this structure. Is it okay, or?
I'm sorry, I'm confused anyway.
No, yeah, maybe to ask, so the
yes.
Space is CAB and C dot AB, or C dot AB is determined by CAB?
So your phase space? Yeah, so the phase space is only CAB. The symplectic structure on that phase space is CAB times dou U CAB. This will be prime minus.
You're integrating over what?
Huh?
And you're integrating over what?
Over scry, so over DU and over the sphere.
So C dot
means
like some kind of shear
tensor? Yeah, it has the geometrical interpretation of shear, yes. Right. Yeah, I had it and then I removed it because it was too much detail, but then maybe that was a mistake. So, so you have a phase space, and then you can and you have the BMS acts symplectically there, so you can find its generator. And so the way the way supertranslations act, it is given in this equation. There are two terms: one that is linear in C, the other one that is independent of C, and that translates into the charge having two components, one that is quadratic in C that generates this part, and one that is linear in C that generates this other part. And following terminology of Strominger and collaborators, we call this the hard part and the soft part of the charge. And so what I wanted to remember from here is that the supertranslation charge has these two components. Quadratic in C, the hard component, and linear in C, the soft component. So this was already kind of old stuff, and let us now go to the recent developments. So far, the discussion of this both BMS group and BMS charges was restricted to either Phi to null infinity or past null infinity. So for completeness here, I'm writing all formulas for future null infinity, but you have similar expressions for past null infinity. But these are, but so far these are kind of disconnected. And the recent development was precisely to relate the two. And in this paper of 2013, Strominger showed that for a certain class of space times that are that are used to describe classical gravitational scattering, then there is a canonical identification between these future and past BMS groups. And so you can have a single diagonal BMS group and acting at the same time at past and future null infinity. And that group is actually a symmetry of the classical gravitational scattering problem. So when you go to, when you ask what does it imply in quantum theory? This statement, for the case of supertranslations, will imply that this the quantum version of the charges we just described commute with the S-metric. So in this sense, you have a charge associated to Phi to null infinity that acts on the outgoing states, and a charge acting past null infinity acting on the incoming state. And when you compute the consequence of such an equation, so you compute matrix elements of such equations, you know the expression of the charges. So you can actually obtain what is the consequence of such an equation. And then you find that this is just a rewriting of Wambach's soft-Raviton theorem. So let me, I will not go into the detail. We will see examples of this with the vector fields. But let me just briefly mention the content of Wambach's soft-Raviton theorem. So we have here the scattering amplitude. Let's just focus on the case of pure gravity, because later, I mean, so far, for simplicity, I'm discussing pure vacuum gravity, but one can have matter also. So we have n plus 1 gravitons, the scattering of n plus 1 gravitons, and one of them, with momentum q, we take its energy to 0. And I'm taking this energy to 0 with this parameter lambda. And then the amplitude diverges as 1 over lambda. But this divergence has a very precise form. So I multiply by lambda here to extract that finite piece. And it is given by this sum over all the external hard gravitons, which are the other ones whose energy is finite. And this epsilon is the polarization tensor of the graviton Q. And then that polarization tensor is contracted with the momentum of each external particle, graviton. And roughly, roughly the idea is that this piece of the equation here is coming from the soft part of the charge. When I write this as remember, the charge has two parts, soft and hard. So the soft one is responsible for the insertion of this graviton. And the hard part, it gives you this right-hand side here. See? Sí.
Can I ask you a question? So the left-hand side, I mean, you're basically dropping out the Q momentum, you're setting it to zero.
Yes.
But the right-hand side still depends heavily on what value Q has.
Yes, it's good. So it's infinitely many, perfect, yeah. So for each direction of the soft graviton, you have one identity. And that's important, right?
Okay.
Right, because here we also have, basically this is a smear version of this one.
And I'm guessing Q is like a unit for vector?
Or? Yeah, here I'm taking Q like a unit for normal, right. Because I was using lambda just separately. Right. But yeah, this is good because it's like.
But
is
Q be null?
No, sorry, Q, my unit, I mean, Q is, Q mu here in this formula is like one and then some unit special. Right. So I have one, the important thing is there is one identity per point on the sphere. Mm-hmm. And basically the smear version of that with this function f on the sphere corresponds to this. And this will be like, we'll use that idea later. So let me now describe this sublimits of graviton theorem, which gives you the next term. If you are doing this lambda going to zero expansion of the amplitude, we have this 1 over lambda divergence described by Wambach theorem, and then there is a finite piece. And I'm just arranging factors of lambda here so that I can extract this finite piece when I take the limit as lambda goes to zero. And this finite piece takes similar form as before, as you sum over all external gravitons. You have the polarization tensor of the soft graviton, which is now contracted not only with the linear momentum, but also with the angular momentum of the external graviton. So now the expression involves derivatives of the momentum variables. So it's really a sum over, each term is like a differential operator acting on the momentum variables. Before it was just like a multiplicative factor. And let us now return to the symmetry consideration. So this formula was motivated by this extended VMS group that was introduced and studied by Barnich and Treset. And this extended VMS group roughly it corresponds to allowing these BMS vector fields we have. If you allow poles on them, then you can have infinitely many local conformal Killing vector fields because we are in two dimensions. So if on the sphere we take this set bar coordinates, so that the sphere metric is proportional to just this set bar, then these local conformal Killing vector fields are holomorphic or anti-holomorphic. And what was shown in this paper is that indeed this CS formula implies that this Virasoro algebra is a symmetry of the S matrix. So, but however, and this is the part that we wanted to understand, it wasn't clear how to recover this CS formula as a Bohr identity. So the situation was very different than for the supertranslation case, where it was very clear how to go back and forth. And so the question we want to answer is if we can have a one-to-one correspondence, as in the supertranslation and Weinberg graviton theory. So in order to try to answer this, let us go into a more detail about this result, because we will use it. So in order to give more detail of this equation here, I first need to tell you what are the charges, right? So these charges at the classical level can be obtained in the same way as we did for supertranslations. So these local CKBs have a symplectic action, so you can compute the canonical charges. And again, the way this act on the free data has a piece that is linear in C, which will give me a hard part of the charge, and then an independent of C piece, which give me a soft part of the charge that is linear in C. And here I just want you to remember that, as in the supertranslation case, there are these soft and hard pieces. And also the particular form this soft charge has, which has this third derivative of the vector field, and that will also be important. And the word identities of this, this Virasoro word identities then can be obtained as in the supertranslation case. So let me give a few more details. One works in this space of asymptotic gravitons. This is the usual Fock space obtained from by acting with the Fock operators associated to given helicity and momentum. And the way you do these things is there is a known way to relate this two-dimensional tensor CIB with the Fock operators, basically by Fourier transform. So the classical charges, you can just write them in terms of Fock operators, and that's how you can compute this matrix element. And when you do so, I'm giving just like the sketch here, what do you get from the as matrix element of this identity is something that looks like a smear version of the CS formula with smearing function given by this third derivative of the vector field. So as we were saying before, we have one identity per point on the sphere. Now I'm smearing such identity with this expression, and this is the what you get as a Bohr identity. And so that's how you see that this CS formula implies this Bohr identity. So let's just to take a break, let me just summarize what we have so far. So BMS is a symmetry of the S matrix, and we have this equivalence between supertranslations and Weinberg soft theorem. We have this extended BMS, which has a Virasoro word identity implied by the CS soft theorem, and we don't know we want to understand how to go back. So it does. From now on, this will be the focus. So the first thing what you can do is you can do some, try to do some reverse engineering and try to read off from the CS formula what, if it looks like a word identity or something. And so some naive trial, and then you see that it looks like it's coming from a word identity of a non-CKV vector field, which is this, it's a family of vector fields parametrized by point on the sphere given here by this WWR. So then the question is if we can make sense of this non-CKV vector field. And the first hint of that this may be possible is that if you go through the steps in this implication here, then it seems that all steps go through if we had replaced this local CKV by just vector fields that, were not holomorphic. This will be set bar here. So it seems that the only place that CKV condition was used is, was in the derivation of the charges, but then it seems that it wasn't used anymore in the other parts. So that's sort of kind of the first hope that maybe one can make sense of non-CKV vector fields. So we now try to push this idea and see if we can make sense of it. And this takes me to the this generalized BMS group. Let me just take a seat. So any question so far?
Can you remind what CKV is?
Sorry. Yeah. Conformal Killing vector on the sphere. Sorry. Yeah. So these were local. We are working with these local conformal Killing vectors, and but the one that you want for the it seems that the one you need to get the CS formula is one that is not in this case anti-holomorphic. It has some. Any other question or comment? So. Let us go back to the beginning when we were looking at asymptotically flat spacetimes, and start with the expansion we had, one over R expansion, but in a non-bounded frame, which means the leading part of I'm in coordinates such that the leading part of the metric, this QAB doesn't have to be the unit sphere metric. And so fortunately, for us, this was the expressions given by Barnich and Tressert were very general, so they accommodated for this more general case. And the only difference with the previous case was that, is that in the coefficient here in the du square has the scalar curvature of the two metric here. And if the two metric is if you choose it to be a unit sphere metric, then the scalar curvature of the unit sphere metric is 2, and this coefficient becomes minus 1, which is you are back in the first case, in the case we started with. But otherwise, it's the same ideas that follow. When you look at Einstein equations, this CAB is a free data, and the sub-leading terms are determined by Einstein equations. So now we ask, we ask what are the vector fields that preserve this form of the metric, allow to this two-dimensional metric to change. And so perhaps not surprisingly, what you find is that there are two families of vector fields that define preserving this form of the metric, the supertranslations as before, and these vector fields parametrized by sphere vector fields, but there's no restriction on them. It is only when we demand that this two-dimensional metric doesn't change. If we demand that this two-dimensional sphere metric is fixed, then we get a condition which is equivalent to saying that the vector field should be conformally Killing. And so that this the group structure you get for this more general diffeomorphisms has the same group structure as in the VMS case, except that the factor that was a group of conformal isometries on the sphere is replaced by the group of diffeomorphisms on the sphere associated to just general vector fields. And I will not, just in case it helps, there is a space-time characterization of these vector fields, which is that they are vector fields that are asymptotically divergence-free. So this is the condition we are kind of relaxing with respect to the VMS, which were asymptotically killing. We are looking at the slightly more general case of just asymptotically divergence-free. But okay, so as a group, we now understand what it means to have non-CKV, but that's not enough. I mean, we need charges if you want to have some more identities, and that this is when it becomes kind of, at first you don't know what to do because this two-dimensional metric is not preserved by the vector field. So what you have at first is like a mapping between your original radiative phase space to a new radiative phase space associated to a different two-dimensional metric. So somehow we need to see if we can work in kind of larger space of pairs of two-dimensional metric and this tensor C. So this large group has a nice action in that big space, but that space is not a symplectic space. So the next idea, kind of to try to fix this, was to look at, see if we could find some symplectic product on this space from the covariant phase space perspective. So let me describe that now. Yes. Right. Somehow, yeah. We see if we can make sense of taking a symplectic product between quantities that involve variations, not just of C but also of Q. So from the covariant phase space perspective, what you have is a symplectic product between solutions of Einstein equations that is given in terms of some integral on a Cauchy slice in terms of variations of the metric. The particular expression doesn't matter for now, but the idea is to whatever variations of the space-time metric, to write them in terms of variations of Q and C, and then see if we can take the limit where the Cauchy slice goes to null infinity. And that strategy was already known to work well for the case where the sphere metric is fixed, and that reproduces this radiative phase space we were talking here. Maybe I could have started from there. I mean, this symplectic product in the radiative phase space, you can understand it as arising from covariant phase space by this limiting procedure. But now we want to see if we can make sense of it for more general variations, and kind of the non-trivial part was that because in principle, if you relax the what you are varying, then most likely you get just divergent quantities. But then there was specific variations we needed to compute the charge, for which this limit makes sense, was finite. And so we could make sense of this product involving these directions delta V that involve changes in the metric and associated change in the C. So we have a finite equation that we will try to solve. And you can then just obtain a charge that satisfies this equation. And again, it has a hard and a soft components. So I will just tell you what are these expressions. So for the hard part, perhaps not surprisingly, I mean, this part was not that surprising that this is the expression you get for the hard charge. It's quadratic, of course, and involves this linear part of the action of B on C, and it is the same expression you have for the hard part of the Virasoro charge, and that's because basically the way this linear piece it looks the same whether you are in this Virasoro case or in this more general case, it looks the same. But you know, the non-trivial part was the soft charge. So here you get, here is where you get contributions from these variations of the these new variations we are allowing of the sphere metric. So you get a bunch of terms in addition to the term. This is the term that will come from the independent of C part of the transformation of C. And then the nice thing is that when you write this expression in the Z-Z-bar coordinates, then all this long expression collapses, simplifies to the expression you have for them appearing in the soft charge of the Virasoro charges. So now we kind of understand why that naive replacement we have made at the beginning, just blindly replacing non-CKB vector fields in these Virasoro charges, why it worked. So this is more like the derivation of such charges without using the CKB condition. So now we can, once we have the charges, we can repeat the same step, and these are the same steps really as in the Virasoro case to find the word identities. I am spelling out a few more details here. So the hard charge acts on an external graviton as this J is a differential operator on the P variable that depends on the vector field. So this is like a generalized angular momentum. If the vector field is CKB, that's just the usual angular momentum. Otherwise, it's some way that these vector fields act on these graviton states. The soft charge is the expression we had with the now written in terms of the Fock operators. And when you evaluate the matrix elements, now explicitly I wrote them here in separating the soft piece and the hard piece. And then you get this. The word identity you get is these are the terms associated to this soft and hard piece. The on the left hand side, you have this the insertion of these soft gravitons. So this is there is a positive helicity insertion multiplied by this term and a negative helicity insertion. These insertions are at the point on the sphere parametrized by Z, so we are integrating. So it is the same form as this Virasoro identities we had. And on the right hand side, you have a sum over the external gravitons with this. On each graviton, we have the action of this generalized angular momentum acting on each of them. So just to conclude with this part, let us then see how we recover the CS formula. So we already knew what was kind of we had already the candidate for the vector field that will do the job. So we have this family of vector fields, K, parameterized by points on the sphere, W and WR. So, and we look at the word identity of this particular vector field. On the left-hand side of the equation, this third derivative becomes a delta, so that the integral just gives you the insertion of the graviton at the point W. And on the right-hand side, there is another non-trivial identity that tells you that this generalized angular momentum associated to this particular vector field is equal to this factor that appears in the CS formula, and in that way you recover the CS formula. And of course, you can go back in the same way as in the Virasoro case by smearing, integrating you go back. So I will just conclude with some comments about the symmetry breaking. So first, let me say that what for the supertranslation case, this was already discussed in great detail. The classic in the that was already known since long that classical vacuum configurations are associated to the vanishing of the new tensor. This new tensor is basically given by this dou u derivative of CIB. Supertranslations map one vacuum configuration to another vacuum configuration. Each vacuum configuration is invariant by a translation group, and you have this identification between the space of classical vacuum and this space, this quotient space. And in quantum theory, what from the work of Strominger, what they show is that in quantum theory, this supertranslation is spontaneously broken to the translation group, and the one can understand the soft gravitons as the associated Goldstone modes of such a symmetry breaking. And these ideas, this set of ideas, can be extended to this larger group we have. So now we consider a space, larger space of vacua, which are pairs of two sphere metric and vanishing nus. And one can show that under this big group, these vacuum configurations are mapped to each other. Each vacuum configuration is invariant under is invariant only under a Poincaré subgroup of G, and so and in quantum theory this group is broken, spontaneously broken to Poincaré group, and we can understand this breaking as happening in two stages. So first we have the breaking associated to a choice of two-dimensional matrix, so there the group of sphere diffeomorphisms goes down to the group of conformal isometries, or which is this part here, this generalized BMS group goes down to a BMS group, and the associated Goldstone modes are the subleading soft gravitons, and then the next breaking is the one we just described. So let me just conclude. So there is a group of asymptotic symmetries larger than BMS that accounts for both leading and subleading soft graviton theorems. So I'm writing this this leading and subleading behavior here in this schematically by these two terms. This group is spontaneously broken down to Poincaré, and the soft gravitons can be thought of as the associated Goldstone modes. The analysis can be extended to massive particles, and if there is interest, I can talk about that next week. And there are many things we would like to understand, how the symmetries realize if one works with IR finite symmetric, better understanding of what is the classical, underlying classical conservation law. So for supertranslations, they have this conservation of energy at every angle. So I don't know if something similar can be said here. And also, one may ask whether this extends to higher dimensions. And for supertranslations, this was discussed in this paper. And OK, thank you very much for your attention.
Your last slide, or one of the last slides. Soft gravitons, or the subleading soft gravitons.
Right.
Do you imagine any subleading stuff?
Yeah. I think it stops. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. the broken group is already pretty large, the diffeomorphism group, so is there anything you can?
Yeah, no, I have. No, yeah, because I mean, they have a formula for the next term, but. So far, it doesn't look like it's like, yes, it, not two digits, it comes from some argument like that, yeah. And so it seems that it's just for those two only, the symmetry interpretation. So that, so far.
Is there anything known about non-asymptotic flat space times or like asymptotic
I mean,
is there anything known about such
gravity theorems? I think so, but I don't know anything about that. Probably, yes. But I don't know. Maybe someone knows.
Is that there's this recent work by Abai, which is trying to reproduce. Just a classical setup.
Right.
Took a long time to realize that you shouldn't go to infinity, which would be spatial infinity or something.
Right.
But to go to the horizon. And so, in a sense, they just started.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And to look at everything at the horizon. But yeah. No, it's kind of it's nice because you regain the diffeomorphisms.
Right.
In a sense.
Right.
And even at infinity.
Right.
So if you would think maybe of a more non-perturbative setup or even in this say flat setup,
uh-huh.
Is it possible to not to spontaneously break the diffeomorphisms or
yeah.
But you maybe, do asymptotic Minkowski stuff, for instance?
Right.
Is it, and that's the question. Is it,
right.
Do you think it's possible or
not? No, maybe some different quantization, right?
Yeah.
Not this folk.
Yeah, then and for keeps is different morphisms.
Right.
Complete
right. But one thing is that they are not gauge. I mean, in principle, these are not gauge diffeomorphisms, right? Because
yeah, because they are. It's bounded.
Right.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
They have non-vanishing charge.
Yeah. But if you then think maybe put it on finite boundary, you would kind of keep the diffeomorphisms.
Right. Yeah.
It's basically indeed something where you now see explicitly how the diffeomorphisms get reduced to.
Right.
To the Poincaré or whatever to make measurements.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so if you, when you generalize the BMS group, right, so as I understand it, all you require of an asymptotic symmetry group is to preserve the fall off of whatever is on the space that characterizes non-infinity. So when you generalize the asymptotic symmetry group, what are you relaxing?
So one way of saying is that what they say is not asymptotic killing symmetries, but somehow they are not killing asymptotic. They are just a weaker condition, this divergence free. It's not that they preserve really the metric. They are changing the metric at infinity, but they are mapping one asymptotic, but still, they map one asymptotic flat space time to another asymptotic flat space time, but to a different one.
So, but in all generality, then.
Right. Yeah. How far?
This,
yeah.
I mean.
Yeah.
In all orders of the Bondi, as Philip was saying, then we will just end up with the diffeomorphisms of the manifold.
We are only looking at the asymptote. I mean.
Sure. But there would just be diffeomorphisms of manifold modular diffeomorphisms that are identity at infinity. Right?
Yeah. I mean, maybe one can try to relax even further, but.
Yeah.
I think each time you try to relax, then you have to see whether you can make sense of such relaxation. If you will get finite charges, I mean, usually you will.
Right. No, I'm trying to ask if there's a non-perturbative criterion where you can just, from knowing things about the gate symmetries of general relativity, say what it is the most generic asymptotic symmetry.
Oh, right. Yeah. No. I have no idea. Right.
Well, first, I just wanted to make a comment about the sub leaving terms. It's just that the sub leaving terms are special in the sense that they are the end of the story. There is nothing beyond. It's not that you stop there because you just got tired, but it's that's the end of the universality.
I see.
So there must be something special about them too.
I see.
So just to encourage you.
Okay.
To think about that. But the question that I have is, so the sub theorems are also valid in more dimensions.
Right?
So it's is there a way to generalize?
I think there should be, because you see, like once we get rid of this local CKV that was relying heavily on two dimensions,
right.
Then everything else looks looks like kind of quite a covariant, I don't know, quite general, that all formulas seems they could, but yeah, one has to work out the details and see if it works out. So that's a nice project if anyone wants to.
So actually, the massive particles, do you mean like coupling it to matter? Or
I for simplicity, I was just with all gravitons, but
yeah.
These external particles, they can be like they don't have to be gravitons. But for this type of discussion, mm-hmm. you need them to be massless so that you can work at non infinity.
Yeah.
And then what we did was see how you can extend these ideas to external massive particles, and mm-hmm. for that, you need to. Extend this action of this generalized VM symmetry sort of to time like infinity so that you know how it acts on massive particles.
Mm-hmm. And that you have done already.
Right, so if there is interest, I can talk about that next.
Any further questions? If not, then let's thank you again.
Thanks.